Channel 2 right at the beginning of this visit of Mr. Eastman after we put the tank in on Monday afternoon, the 22nd of July, 74. The talk with Mr. Eastman, just him and me mostly, Faye went to the store on Monday after he put the tank in towards the end of the day while he's waiting for Faye for some chicken for Ms. Eastman this 22nd, Monday the 22nd of bronze beginning around Monday the 22nd of July, 74.
I stopped down there. You know what now? You see that old water log there and that old rusty thing there. You know, the trouble is, what a fella gets into trouble by trying to just make it last a little longer. You know, one of the things that has hurt me more than anything else is looking for bargains.
Jesus, we're all that same way.
Yeah. You see, I have, oh, shoot fire. You see, these machines in here, I don't look for bargains anymore. Mm-hmm. Oh, and these things here, I don't want a bargain. Now, these ain't any good, Mr. Eastman. They not any good. They just go like
a Japanese?
No. They just cheap, no count. I wish I had a Japanese or something that would work all right. But you see, that old, now what I'm saying is, that old tank, the way it was, see, it was rusted out.
Yeah.
And then that top of it, you see, you could tell by looking at it wasn't going to
hold. You know, a tank is just as good as it is in its poorest part.
Yeah.
The same way with a chain. A chain is just as good as the poorest link.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I know. When I first come out here, that old tank out there was rusted through, you see, and the water would spurt out. And I just cut off a little switch and stick in there.
Well, sir, you know, Barnard has got a tank down there at his house. Barnard has got a tank down there to his house, and it had a hole come in the side of it.
Yeah.
And I took and made a band to go around that damn tank.
Yeah.
And put a little piece of rubber over that hole.
Yeah.
And drawed that band up tight.
Yeah.
And you know that damn thing is still on there. I bet it's been on there 10 years.
Oh, don't tell me.
Yes, sir.
Don't tell me, Mr.
I'd forgot all about it. And I was over there the other day, and I happened to think of it, and I went and looked to see if he'd ever put a new tank on, and he hadn't. The same damn thing was there with that same draw band on it.
That's something. I never heard of that. No, I never heard anything like it. What'd you do? You just cut you some tin out?
Well, I had a piece of that band iron that is about an inch by, I don't know, whether it is, eighth or sixteenth of an inch.
Yeah.
And I just made a draw band of it and put a bolt, so bent the ends up, you know, and put a bolt right through it and drawed it right up.
Yeah. And there's not enough pressure on it to bother.
No, the pressure is all on that little piece of rubber.
Yeah. What do you get in that, 30 pounds?
I had a tank, and I took one of them sheet metal screws and a piece of rubber, tightened that in there, and geez, that run for quite a while. And all at once one day, the goddamn thing blew.
Yeah.
You see, the pressure was all on the side walls of the tank.
Yeah.
You see, this other is just pushing right against it, see?
Yeah. Yes, if you'd put that screw in there and then put the... But you didn't need the screw. You just needed a little bit of something. You just put a piece of... Just put some rubber.
Yeah.
Rubber band. Well, now, you know, I thought about this thing here. I thought about putting some caulking compound or something down there and getting a new one of those jiggers and tightening it up. Would that help him? Caulking compound won't hold anything.
Yeah, I don't believe it.
What could you have put down in that?
Well, if I could have found that little tool there, you see, that's got a thing on the end of it to cut that down a little bit deeper.
Yeah.
See, to reseat that in there.
Yeah.
Well, then you take that out and turn this other part in there and thread it down in there. And then you can turn that other down in tight.
Well, what?
But I couldn't find the darn thing.
Well, where would you keep that?
Huh?
You wouldn't keep it with your wrenches.
No, I don't know whether... I know I've got one in the truck there for radiator valves. You know what I mean by that? These steam radiators, you know.
Oh, yeah.
And sometimes the valve would get cut off, broke off or something in that, you know, and then it had a easy out on it.
Mm-hmm.
To turn them threads out. The new tap there to tap it in. I know where that is in the truck, but that other thing, I don't know.
But there's not any more radiator valves.
No, I got rid of the radiator business when I come down to Florida.
Yeah.
There's damn few places in Florida that's got those radiators in.
Yeah.
You once in a while you'll find a place that's got the hot water radiators.
Yeah. I don't think I have ever run into one down here.
There's one up there in McIntosh where I don't know what their names are. They live there now. They own the fish camp down there. But the fellow that was in there with Dorr, D-O-A-R, Dorr.
Yeah.
And they've got a hot water boiler with a circulator on it.
And fish camp.
I put in a hot water heating system in a house up in Madison, New York one time that created a lot of talk.
Yeah.
We took one of them big 80-gallon electric hot water heaters. Of course, they've got a thermostat on them to keep that water at such a temperature, see, around 125, 150. Well, then we took and tapped off that, and I put a circulator on it, and run to the radiators. Well, then I had a thermostat in the house that operated that circulator, see? So that when the room got cold, that circulator would start, and to pump that water from the electric water tank around through them radiators and then back into the tank. See, it was circulated around there.
Mm-hmm.
And that was the first one that was ever heard of.
Yeah.
Gee, one of the boys was going up to Syracuse University and he told him up there and held a professor up there, brought a whole class down there to see that outfit.
How did you happen to rig it up like that, Mr. Sweet?
Well, the fellow that owned the house, he and I got talking one day when he was building this new house.
Yeah.
And we got talking about the water heaters and one thing and another in there. And he said, by God, if you will put it in, I'll pay for it.
Yeah.
So I put it in.
Yeah. You just sort of cooked it up between you.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, where'd you get the idea?
Well, just kind of come in my head.
Well, you had that big water heater, though.
Yeah. Well, we used to use them circulators on coal furnaces, you know, coal boilers, and to heat it up. And I said to this fellow, I said, I don't see why they couldn't take an electric water heater and do just the same as the coal furnace does.
Oh, yeah.
But the more he got thinking about it, he said, geez, we'd take and buy a 80-gallon one.
That steam heat, that circulating water and all, that was more satisfactory than hot air.
Oh, well, in a way, yes. Your house is more evenly hot with the hot water than it is with hot air.
Yeah.
And I've put in a devil lot of hot air furnaces.
Oh, have you?
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Now, what did you say about your first wife, that she had the...
She had asthma.
Asthma, and you gave her all them
adrenaline.
Shots.
Adrenaline.
And that gave her relief. When she got so she couldn't breathe, you gave her a shot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then when she'd get awful bad, or if she happened to get somewhere and where they had this ragweed.
Yeah.
If she got 3-4 whiffs of that ragweed, Jesus, boy, he'd put her right in the hospital.
Oh, is that right?
Her lungs would fill right up, and you know, they'd take her to the hospital. Mm-hmm. Here's something that's almost unbelievable. And they would give her something. They had quite a time talking me into giving her that stuff in the beginning. But, they'd take and give her that damn stuff, and you know, she'd sit there with her mouth open, and the bubbles would just keep right on coming right out of her lungs. It just appeared just like, you know, that she'd swallowed some soap or something, you know. Them bubbles would just keep, God, how they'd come out of her mouth.
Hmm.
And after they got her lungs cleaned out, well, then... she'd be all right again.
Good Lord. Good Lord. She really had it, didn't she? Did you ever have any allergy
no.
like that?
And then they had one room in the hospital that was special for asthmatics that had a air purifier in the window.
Yeah.
Jesus, they charge you $10 a day for that damn air purifier.
Mm-hmm. That was a whole lot back then.
Yeah, I bet they charge 25 or 30 today.
Yeah. Yeah. Man alive. Man alive.
I used to buy that adrenaline. Well, sometimes I'd get 100 in the box, and sometimes I'd get 500.
Yeah.
They're little ampules.
Yeah.
These little damn bottles there, you know, well, they're... Yeah, just about as big around as your pencil and just about that long.
Yeah.
See? Well, then, there's glass, and they come down here almost together. Well, you had a little file that you'd file that a little bit, you know, and snap it.
Yeah.
I got so I could snap them goddamn things without filing them.
Yeah. Yeah. And then inject it. That, you know, that allergy is a bad thing. I got out here once or twice when the weeds was dry. All that dust coming up and all the seed and all like that, you see, and mowing with that tractor. Oh, it was just a terrific, you see. And once or twice, I felt a little rawness from it. But now you know that your system's got to be pretty good to take all that.
Oh,
Mr.
yeah.
I quit doing it. I mean, I wouldn't keep on doing it. When I found out it was that bad, you know, you could wait till some rainy day or something and go in there and do it and not get all that stuff.
And one time she got awful bad. Jesus, she turned all black on me. And I kept a pumping the adrenaline to her, and I gave her 6 shots, one right after the other.
Oh, really?
The doctor said if I hadn't have done that, she'd have died.
Is that right? So it was just your judgment. You didn't know to.
No, I didn't know anything about it. I was just saying, Jesus, if I give her another one, maybe it'll bring her out of it. And if I give her another one, maybe that'll do it. And I had to give her 6 shots.
Now, that lady you was talking about, was that up there in your country, up there where she the one that had the powders?
Yeah.
How'd that go?
Yeah, she had that soda.
Yeah.
That sal soda.
She come out of there just hopping mad, is that it?
Yeah, they used to take a piece of paper, you know, and double it up.
Yeah.
And then put that powder in there, and then double the paper over this way, and then double the ends over.
See? Yeah.
And make the powders of them.
Yeah, that's a dose.
Yeah, a teaspoonful. And a glass of water.
Yeah.
Jesus, if you ever see a woman that was mad, it was her. Oh, yeah. Boy.
Yeah. What'd she say?
What? She gave him hell for coming there every couple of weeks and giving him and paying him for them damn powders, and they wasn't on no soda.
And she'd been doing that for a long time.
Yeah.
And all he's trying to do is make her drink water.
Yeah.
So that again.
They tell me that there's a damned medicine, a pill, that some doctors give them. It's just a sugar pill.
Yeah.
Just to make them drink water.
Oh, really? Yeah. Because they'll do that. They'll take a pill every 4 hours or whatever it is.
Yeah.
But they won't just go drink a glass of water every 4 hours.
Yeah.
How much water do you drink?
Oh, Jesus, I drink quite a lot.
You drink it by the glassful?
Well, generally. I got a glass in the bathroom that holds just about as much as that.
Yeah.
And
that's about a half a glass.
Well, a little bit more. Jesus, you know, about 3 times a night I get up. I drink one before I go to bed.
Yeah.
You get up about 3 times in the night and drink one of them. So.
Oh, you drink it during the night?
Mm-hmm. I take a drink in the night, and then 2 or 3 hours I have to get up again to make water.
And then you drink some more?
Then I drink some more, and then that'll make you get up again, don't you see?
Yeah. Well, now that's... That's drinking around the clock, Mr.
Yeah.
When did you start that?
When did I start it?
Yeah.
Oh, I've done that for years. I don't know when I did start it.
You know, I used to. You see, out there in the field, we'd have them jugs. And we just turn the jug up, see, and drink away. And you know, you get so.
Is that water in it or cider? You know, when I was young, they didn't drink much beer. Beer was just coming in. It was all cider.
Yeah.
My father-in-law used to put down 15 barrels of cider every fall.
barrels.
55 gallons in a barrel. God, he'd have friends all winter long.
You know he would, yes.
Now, I was saved 2 barrels of it, or figured on it, for haying. For in the summer, you know. You know, as long as you're working right along, you could drink a glass of that cider every load.
Oh, really?
But if you sat down by Jesus to rest while somebody got a load of hay,
yeah,
you'd be drunker than the devil.
Oh, he'd work on you that fast?
Oh, God. My neighbor up there, he was quite a heavy man. He'd weigh about 2 1/4 or so. And my father-in-law, he didn't weigh on about 110, 15, and I weighed about 150. And this other fellow had a boy weighed about 150. Well, we changed hands. And this time, we were down there and we were getting hay right there close to the barn. And the barn sat on the lower side of the road. So when she drove right up the road there and drove right into the barn floor, see. And then the cows were down. You had to go down around to get down underneath where the cows were. Well, right up across the road, there was this apple tree. Well, we'd been getting quite a lot of hay that afternoon. It was hotter in places. I had one more load to get. And this neighbor says to my father-in-law, he says, Fred, he says, I'm going to set out this load, he says, and let you fellas get it. He says, I'm getting pretty tired. So he went up there and sat under that apple tree. Well, we went up and got, my father-in-law and I and this other fella went up there and got the load of hay. Got back and there laid Jay under that tree, you know, and he was a snoring like hell. And you couldn't wake him up in the morning, anything in the world. Boy, he was drunker than blazes. The boy goes up and tells his mother. And she was quite a churchified woman, you know. Jesus, she wouldn't miss church on a Sunday no more than anything in the world. You'd ought to have seen her come down the road. Boy, was she mad. Oh, yeah. She gave my father-in-law the devil. My father-in-law said to God, I didn't make him drink it.
He must have been a pretty much of a customer, your father-in-law, Mr. Eastman. You'd save out 2 barrels.
For hand.
For hand.
Yeah.
Well, that's a good long time.
Yeah, well.
That's a long in the summer after the hay gets ripe.
Yeah.
Right. And you could take a glass.
You could drink a glass of that every load of hay, as long as you were working right along.
But every load of hay.
If you went and sat down, boy, everything would begin to get get blurry.
How do you figure that?
God, I don't know.
If you sat down, it worked on you more.
I was down to my next door neighbor down the other way in the winter time. And he had a big buzz pile there, gonna buzz up the wood, you know, to get wood from winter, and had a buzz pile down there. I went down to help him buzz that pile of wood. Well, gee, just a week before that, he took a lot of apples and sugar beets, put some sugar beets in with it, and had it ground up in the cider.
Yeah.
Well, you know, it hadn't been made 2 weeks. Well, you take cider, that 2 weeks old, it's just beginning to ferment a little bit, you know, see, so that it's just good. But geez, you know, we had that sugar beets in it. And, you know, I drank a couple glasses of that, and the son of a bitch, I started for home, and there were telephone poles on both sides of the road.
I never heard of that, but the sugar beets did the work.
Yeah.
I enjoy. I don't know, it makes me thirsty. I haven't had no cider. I haven't had no cider. I brought up on cider too, Mr. Eastman.
Yeah.
And we had cider at all stages. And down here, we don't even have an apple.
No.
That's something. That haying didn't last long. How many days did you put in haying?
Haying? Oh, God, I don't know. You see, you'd get the first cutting of hay cut, and then second cutting would come on about a week after that, and you're starting to cut it the second time.
Yeah. Oh, you mean that fast?
Alfalfa.
You mean it'd come back that fast?
Yeah.
Well, there's nothing that ever comes up to alfalfa, is
there? It would come right up, and oats would get up about that high, you know.
Yeah.
Of course, when, along about, from 1915, 1925, you take the alfalfa up there, it would grow right up even to the horse's back. And you take and mow right along, you know. And you'd cut it off, and you couldn't tell exactly where it was cut off, and you'd have to drive with your left wheel where your right wheel had been before. See,
yeah.
If you went along
yeah.
before like that,
yeah.
you take and drive over so as to keep this left wheel where your right wheel had went, see?
Yeah.
And cut right straight along, and that'd knock it down, and then the next time you'd come around
yeah.
just about like that.
Yeah.
What the hell do you think? There was some element in that soil that alfalfa took out.
Yeah.
And you get alfalfa now, it's up that high, and you got a hell of a crop.
Yes, yes. Yes, it's a wonderful thing, wasn't it? It was head high.
Yeah.
Is there any hay you ever measure up to alfalfa?
Well, I don't think there is, as far as that goes. I guess it clover is about the next.
Yeah. Clover. You make hay, clover hay?
Yeah, clover, and then put some timothy in with it.
Yeah.
You cut your clover one year, and the next year it'd be all clear timothy. There wouldn't be no clover there.
Yeah. So?
Clover won't stay only one year.
Oh, it won't?
No. The alfalfa, Jesus, I've seen alfalfa roots that, by God, is as big around as my arm.
Oh, really?
And you take them plow, you come along to them with a team on a plow, you know?
Yeah.
And you hit one of them old big ones, and Jesus, man, it would flop you.
Oh, really?
We used to take and take the plow points.
Yeah.
And grind notches in it.
Yeah.
So to cut them roots off.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And we had a gravel bed up there that was right in the middle of an alfalfa lot. And the sides of that was right up and down, you know. And there was an alfalfa root up there, and it come right straight down. And I pulled on it, and it broke off. It was pretty near as big as my little finger where it broke off. And I had a root 13 feet long.
Good Lord.
They say that them alfalfa roots will go till they hit water.
Yeah. I think Faye got in the wrong county.
Huh?
I don't know what keeping Faye. She just going over.
Oh.
She must have had something in mind, or else she wouldn't have had you waiting, Mr. Eastman.
I don't know. Let's see. She said she had something she was going to send down to Evelyn there.
Yes. Yeah, that's already done. That's ready. I don't know. She got something else in her mind now. What was that? What else was you telling about that doctor, Mr. Eastman?
That's a different doctor there that had the woman with the goiter.
Yeah.
That was a different doctor.
Yeah, what was that? Either.
Well, she claimed that she was an old school teacher, see?
Yeah.
And teaching school, and she claimed that goiter was choking her so that she couldn't talk.
Yeah.
And she was having a hell of a time about it. Old doctor opened up the door and he said, the worst thing that can happen to a woman is have them lose their voice.
Yeah.
Boy, oh boy, she started right in telling him. Laugh, that tickled old Doc Grant. Boy, he laughed and laughed and laughed about that, you know. He says, I knew, but God, I could make you talk, he says.
Oh, my. That's pretty good. I forgot it already. Mr. Eastman, I don't understand how it is that Ms. Eastman can look so healthy.
Ms. What? You don't understand now what?
How Ms. Eastman can look so healthy when she's just been in the hospital all
night. Yeah, well, I don't know.
Well, did you ever see anybody who looked healthy?
No, she looks healthy.
Why, she's got a good color. Her face, her eyes are bright.
Yeah. But she got that damned awful pain in here, and it goes into her back.
Yeah. But, you know, it's just hard to take it seriously.
Yeah,
whenever
she gets up and starts to walk, you know, and that pain will hit her, and her knee is put in her buckle.
Oh, really? And now she just had that recently.
Yeah.
She hadn't had that long. Well, I'll tell you, did you ever batch up the country?
Yeah, sometimes when the old woman was in the hospital.
Yeah, you bet, but that wouldn't be for long at a time.
No. Generally about 2 weeks.
All that long. Well, gee whiz, you got so you could pretty well cook.
Yeah.
Can you broil and do all those things? What do you cook, Mr. Eaton?
Well, I cook just about everything, but I don't do any bacon. Don't bake any cakes or pies. We always used to buy them.
Yes.
I can take your potatoes. I can fix your potatoes or rice pudding or anything.
Can you do rice pudding?
Yeah.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you make that? Oh, man. I love rice pudding and I never have it.
Yeah?
No, never have any. Hell, I could practically live on that half the time.
Well, I haven't had any in quite a little while. There's a lot of things that I like that Evelyn don't make. But.
You think the cook tends to cook the stuff that the cook likes?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, here's our friend. We'll see what she got. Going in the other part of the house. Well, that's heavy. Let's hear about it. You went further than the store.
Oh, I just went to the store, but I tell you, everybody in Alachua County was there. And I didn't have to wait, but I got into it.
What do you know?
First time I've been down there that they've been that busy. Vi was there.
Oh, Vi was there.
And she Toby, was that his name? He asked about you, little fella. He said, "How's Mr. Miles?" And she answered. But I said, "He's fine. He's one of the best speakers I ever saw."
I don't know who Toby is.
Huh?
She saw Vi down the store. Vi, great big nigger woman. I've known her a long time. And
yeah.
We were picking peas together not long ago. And she's with some fella named Toby, and I can't remember who Toby is.
Small, very nice looking.
Yeah. That's funny. Mr. Eastman, you had a big crop of grapefruit last year.
Yeah.
How many did you have?
I don't know, between 2 and 3 bushels.
Now,
on that one tree.
Yeah. So now you got 7 big ones?
I think there's 9.
9 big ones. And then up in the top you got a few.
Yeah. There may be a few more that hid by the leaves there, you know, that you don't see.
Yeah.
But,
Well, are other people's the same way?
Well, I don't know. I don't know.
I never have had any citrus. I figured there was just too much to it for me.
Miss Eastman, that's chicken and carrots and potatoes in there and onions.
Yeah?
And it's not fried, and the only oil in there is a vegetable, a little vegetable
yeah.
oil. So she, and it's very little salt.
She ought to be able to eat that.
Yeah, and the juice is real good. I don't know.
You better save part of that for yourself.
Well, I got some over there, but this you can put in the refrigerator and keep for several days.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is warm it up a little bit. And
you don't have anything put in?
I was just thinking. I was going to put in that small thing right there.
Why don't you put it in this? And this is a little smaller. Just take the top off.
That'd be a good thing. Yeah. Then you can put it in your own pan. Then you won't have to return anything. And she said you didn't care too much for rice, so I'm not sending rice, I'm sending potatoes.
That'd be all right. Yes, it's plentiful. They are plentiful. We used to buy that milk, Mr. Eastman, by that whole gallon, but it got so it wouldn't keep.
What, about $1.90 a gallon?
Well, when I started, it was $1.09.
Yeah, I know. That little store down there next to us, you know.
Yeah.
I'd go over and get 2 quarts of milk. That is 2 of the, I take and get 1 of the whole milk in a 2-quart container there, and 1 of the skim milk in a 2-quart. I gave her $2, 2 $1 bills. So I said a 2, 2, and 2. I get 2 of the milk. And I gave her $2, and she gives me 2 pennies back.
Okay. That won't keep it warm like the metal will. He can just put it in something and heat it. Hey, Mr. Eastman can batch, and he can cook bread pudding, rice pudding. Rice pudding.
Oh, you can. I love rice.
Well, I ain't made any in quite a long time.
I like rice pudding.
I used to cook it.
Okay. And I have a... She can eat beets, and with a small can of... You don't like peas, so there's a small can of peas in there. You open them for her.
She's got some peas down there.
Well, you take these. And some beets. She likes beets. And there they are. All you have to do is just keep whatever you want of that tonight. You can turn the oven on, can't you?
Yeah.
Well, if you eat now, you won't have to heat it. It'll be warm.
If you eat right now, you just
eat
it.
Yeah, well, we'll probably eat that as soon as I get down there.
Open the door.
All right, let me open it.
Okay, thank you.
Yes, sir, we thank you.
Channel 2 right around 700. And this is the end of the talk with Mr. Eastman. This is the unexpected one. We put the tank in today. Let's see, that would make it on Monday the 22nd of July 74. Monday the 22nd of July 74. And we put the tank in, and Mr. Eastman waited around to get some chicken that Faye cooked for him, for Ms. Eastman. Miss Eastman, if we'd found that, it'd have saved us a little trouble along, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Might not even put in all those new things.
Well, but he said he could hear water running out there, see, and so, Jesus, I begin a close examination to find out where that water was going.
Oh, is that it?
No, I told Miss Eastman. That's on.
We tried to shut the faucet off, and Jesus, I twisted the damn shank right off of it, so. Then I said, well, now I know what we can do. Put a new one on.
You suppose that could have been leaking all the time?
Yeah.
It was just running, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I checked it out there, Miss Eastman. I checked it. But you see what I did? It gets up even with those two little holes in that tub out there. And then you can't see it running.
There might be a hole in that doggone pipe, too, out there somewhere.
Well, I could think of all the pipes that run around here that might have holes on them.
And that was the only one, that was the very one, Faye, we weren't using.
Yeah.
There are no horses out there.
Yeah.
I went out there for some reason or other. I've been aiming to go out there and take the water all out of the tub,
And clean it out, huh?
Yeah, and then stop it from coming in, stop that valve. And I've been putting that off. It cost me, didn't it?
Well, you needed a new pump anyway.
Yeah.
And you sure needed a new tank.
Yep.
So, I guess we can't... Mr. Eastman, this is way yonder. So much meat, my goodness. Shouldn't do that.
Yeah.
Now, how does she like it cooked?
Well, you know... I warmed up that chicken and stuff, and she said that tasted the best to her of anything she's had in a long time.
Oh, really? Well, that pleases me.
Well, then, Jesus, tonight, I figured I'm getting something quick for supper, see, because I was coming up here. By God, she'd got to have some rice cooked to go with the balance of that chicken. So then that took an extra half an hour. I said, by Jesus, the next time Anna Latin comes over here, I'm going to tell her that you're getting better.
Yeah.
You got a little cold water in there?
Yes, that's what I was going to get out of
there.
Very good.
Mr. Eastman's a water drinker.
Yeah.
I ought to, you see. Mrs. Eastman, I have to have a little fruit juice to go along with this water, or else it...
So...
Well, that's it.
She told me that tasted so good. She says, you take up some of that round steak.
Oh!
Well, you had a... You had a quarter, didn't you?
Yeah.
Gee whiz, that's the way to buy it.
Yeah, I broiled one of them steaks for dinner. And then, it was about that big, you see. It wasn't round, it was kind of oblong, about like that. Well, then, after it was broiled, I took and cut right out this chunk right out of the middle of it there for her, see, and then she didn't get no fat.
Yeah.
Oh. Just give her the heart of it.
She ain't supposed to have any fat.
Uh-huh. But she's at least eating.
Huh?
She's eating now. Eating.
Yeah, she was eating better. And eat tonight, she ate quite a lot of rice and chicken. And
well, that won't fill her up that fast, will it? Figure out something else. What else you like,
Missy? I don't know, I guess.
Well, it's easy to keep some of that chicken on hand. And I
we got, I don't know, 8 or 10 in the freezer out there now.
Well, bring them up here.
Well, I mean, yeah, if you'll bring one up here, let me, if she likes it, you know, that's just stewed. I'll cook it for her.
I can cook it.
I know, but you got other things
to do.
You
got other things, too.
And I can do it and do something else, too.
Yeah.
You know, when Barnard was in the restaurant over there, I used to buy them boxes of chicken.
Yes?
He'd get them for me, you know, the same price that he'd give for the restaurant right there, see? That'd be 64, 65, up 68 pounds in a box.
Oh, really?
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Ooh. I'd take and buy a box of chicken and take them right over, and then I'd take some of them baggies, you know, the middle-sized baggies, and put one chicken in a bag, see?
Yeah. Well, that's the way to buy it.
Well, now, is that raw or cooked?
That's raw.
Raw. Just butchered. Just cut up.
No, they're just whole chicken. They just...
Just And you'd buy how many?
Yeah, we'd take and get, there'd be 16 or 18 in a box.
Oh, yeah, and you'd get a box?
Yeah.
And you got them for the same price, you got them for the price he paid for them. Well, you couldn't lose on that, Miss Eastman. Well, now, what else is it? You can't eat chicken all the time. You can eat...
then Miss Barnard over there, she was always giving me cucumbers or squash or onions or something, you know. You take them damn great big onions like that, because,
yeah.
Jesus, they really soak you for them, you know. I see some down there in the store down to Ocala,
yeah.
And they was all had the price on each onion.
Oh.
Huh?
Yeah.
I saw one onion down there, it was about that big around, and they're 48 cents. 48 cents for one onion.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I don't know what it weighed. I don't know what they did figure a pound for them. But,
yeah.
Geez, you know, up there, about 10, 12 miles from where I lived up there was what they called Onion Town.
Oh, really?
Sure, up there at Canastota. Onion Town. Hell, they raised onions up there, you know, by the carloads. Hell yes, they ship them out of there probably 300-400 carloads a year.
Good Lord.
God, it's a sight to go up there. You drive along the road and you see them rows of onions, but Jesus, just as far back in the lot as you could see. Rows of onions.
Oh, really? You mean the land was up flat?
Yeah, it was just as flat as a table up there. Muck.
Oh, muck. How far was that from you?
Oh, about 10, 12 miles.
Good Lord. Was that the country like you lived in?
Well, where I lived there, no. We had some hilly country there.
Yeah, but it's still good country.
Jesus, that land up in there grow damn good crops, and you didn't have to put 500 pounds of fertilizer to the acre either.
Well, hell. In 1960, when I raised sweet potatoes over there in the flatwoods, they put 1,000 pounds
to the acre.
Yes, sir. That's all the. I tell you what they did, Miss Eastman. They didn't measure it. They just put it in their fertilizer bins
and let it run.
Let it run as fast as it come out, and that's all it come. 1,000 pounds an acre.
Geez, you know, you take up home there planting oats or oats, wheat, or barley, or any of that stuff. They didn't put only about 200 pounds of fertilizer to the acre.
Yes.
I know this old fellow that used to come down here with me. He had a big farm and had a cousin that was a lawyer, and he had two or three big farms that he got a hold of. So he wanted Dan to go over there and see about drilling in the oats over there to put fertilizer on. Jesus, he came over there and old Dan was putting on 500 pounds to the acre of fertilizer on there. And this Stanley Bliss's name was. Boy, he went sky high. Dan said, Jesus, I'm experimenting. Well, Stanley said, if you want to experiment, he says, you go on your own land.
Oh, shit. I'll tell you, that's something.
If you want to experiment that way, he says, but God, you try it on your own land.
Well... I tell you, that's sparser, Mr. Eason, to have land like that. It's sparser. Now, this fellow that come down with you, he had a good farm up there, but he never farmed down here.
Oh,
No, he didn't. He didn't have no farm down here.
Yeah.
No, he just farmed up there.
Well, you know, if he'd farmed down here, he'd have lost money.
Yeah.
It always costs you down here. You got to learn, and you do it wrong.
No, Dan had a farm up there about 160 acres in it, and down to.
Now that was all arable land.
Well, pretty much. It wasn't all tillable, no. But right back of the house is on the upper side of the road, and up back of the house is quite steep up there for a ways. Well, when you get up on top, it's just as damn flat as this table.
Oh.
See? But right around the house and around there, and of course they had that in cow pasture, you see?
Yeah.
Around there, but geez, you had to go corner ways up that damn hill there to get up on top.
Yeah, it was that steep.
Well, then down below the road, there was probably... Well, I got an idea that the farm is about half and half divided there. There'd probably be about 75, 80 acres down below the road. And about 50 acres of it that was nice. And the rest of that was all a damn gully down in there.
This lady's on the
face. I'm just getting cool.
Put your chair over here. Miss Eastman, now that was Dan that come down with you.
Yeah, Dan Mitchell his name was.
Dan Mitchell, I'm afraid you answer. And he'd work along with you?
Huh?
He'd work along with you down here?
No. Hell, when I come down here then, we didn't do no work winters. All we done is just come down here. I had a little money them days, but my first wife stole it all.
Oh, that was before.
Yeah, Jesus, I had it in joint account, and I went back up there one winter, or one spring, you know, and Jesus, she drawed it all out.
Yeah.
Goddamn lawyer told her to.
Yeah. And all the rest of your property.
Yeah. Well, I had a farm up there that was in my name that she couldn't touch, and I had the house and the lot in the village.
But she got your bank account. Yeah. Now she was in bad health.
Well, she had that asthma.
Yes. Well, what happened to that asthma after you weren't there to give her those?
Well, after she got so she could give the shots to herself.
Did she prosper?
Well, no, she didn't prosper too much there. Cause you never see anybody that stole any money that did prosper.
Well, I don't know about that.
She just had bad advice.
You take that damn Gurney. See, the United States Senator Gurney? He got that damn money, you know, and the son of a bitch, he stole it.
Yeah.
Now he's trying to get out of it, and I hope they warp it to him.
They go, well, they can't, yes. I'm surprised they haven't already done it. Mr. Eastman, this fella, your father-in-law, he lived until 1950.
Huh?
Didn't you say your father-in-law lived until 1950?
No, he died in 1926.
Well, how'd I get that mixed up? 1926.
Goodness.
Well, you worked with him right smart after you married.
Yeah.
And he a pretty good farmer?
Yeah. He's a darn good cow man. Jeez, they always had them purebred Holsteins, you know.
Yeah.
And they was way up in snuff with them there.
Dairy.
He had the Hangerville and the Incas and Pontiacs.
Yeah. What happened to him?
Well, he had sugar diabetes, and he died in 1926.
And he wasn't very old.
He's 52.
He just didn't take care of it.
Well, they didn't know how to handle sugar diabetes in them days like they do now.
Yeah.
You know, they come out, well, just about the time he died, they started coming out with insulin.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
See, but he was too far gone. The insulin wouldn't help him any.
Oh,
but
really?
There was another woman that lived just a little ways from us, and she had the sugar diabetes too, but she wasn't quite so far gone, and they got giving her insulin there, and she lived quite a while.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what do you know? Just a matter of months, maybe.
Yeah. Well, you know. They come out with that gluten bread for sugar diabetes. My father-in-law always claimed that after he'd had it down about a half, three quarters of an hour, he said it felt just like stones in his stomach.
Yeah.
And he said if you worked around like that, he said you could almost feel them damn stones hit together. He says to me one day, he says, Arthur, if you ever get sugar diabetes, he says, you might just as well die of sugar diabetes. It's to die of starvation. See, they put him on diets, you know, and one thing and another there. And hell, we used to have to drive 25 miles to get that gluten bread. Twice a week. I had to take the car and drive to Rome, New York, to get that bread, that gluten bread.
Yeah.
It was something new they'd just come out with, you see.
Did he figure it helped him a little?
God, I don't know. He said it felt just like stones in his stomach.
Yeah.
But he could eat lettuce, and I forgot what kind of a deal they did have on for him there, but I know that it was pretty thin.
Yeah. And he was used to eating.
When he was a young man, for breakfast, he wanted a bowl of milk and a slice of pie.
Is that right?
Yeah.
A bowl of milk.
Yeah. He used to like warm milk right from the cow, you know. And Jesus, bring a pail of warm milk right up from the barn up to the house, and boy, he'd drink it right down.
Just drink the warm milk?
Yeah.
And a piece of pie.
Yeah. That was his breakfast.
Yeah. Did you ever drink warm milk?
I never could drink milk.
Just couldn't drink milk? I have drunk warm milk, and I like it. But you see, I never was very long where I could get it.
Hell,
unless
really,
I just eat it.
They put up a hell of a bellyache about pasteurizing milk, you know. Well, I don't believe it amounts to hell rumors they tell about.
Not as important as they think, as they let on.
They bellyache about pasteurizing it and one thing or another, and I don't think it's a bit better.
Well, one thing about it changes the taste.
And I've worked all around milk, you know, and in them milk plants, on pasteurizers and all of that stuff, and separators, and cheese and cream and butter and everything. I never could drink any of that milk, you know, and the devil, a lot of them fellas would just take a can of milk, you know, and pour right in the cover. And the cover would hold about a quart and a half. Gee, they fill the cover right up and stand right there and drink it right in. Well, we was working one night in the milk station up there, changing pasteurizers, putting in a couple of new ones.
Yeah.
And we had to do that, you know, after the milk station was closed, see, from taking in the milk. We was working up there one night, and about 10 o'clock, and of course the milk station was right on the railroad. And it was a snowing and a blowing, oh, jeezer, it was bad. Well, I was down in the boiler room cutting a piece of pipe to put into this pasteurizer. Another fellow that worked in the milk station, he was working with me there that night. And I got the piece of pipe, and I come up, and he says, Jesus, I looked over there in the goddamn corner, there was a great big burly Irishman. By God, he was 6 feet and a half tall, I guess, and a great big fella, hell of a big guy. And he'd come into the station there. He'd been hopping freight trains, but he missed the train out of Oneida, so he thought he'd walk up the railroad tracks up to Norwich, New York. And God, it was about, I don't know, 25, 30 miles. But and he see the light in the milk station, so he come in, and he wanted to stay all night there. Well, this other fellow told him, he said, God, we can't leave you here all night. He says, we're just about ready to close up right now. Well, anyone know if you can have a drink of milk? And this other fellow said, yeah, you can have all the milk you want. And by Jesus, he tipped one of them damn cans up, and he filled that cover full. He drinks her right down.
Is that right?
And the fellow says he licked his chops there a few minutes, and he said, Jesus, that was good. I think I'll try another one. And I'll be damned. He just stood right there and he drank two of them milk can covers full of milk.
Why, Miss Eastman?
I don't know how the devil a man could do it. I don't know how he could drink a whole cover full, but geez, he did. And then turn right around and drink the second one. Well, he says, if I can't stay here all night, I might just as well go up the railroad tracks. And by Jesus, out the door he went.
Well. But he had his stomach full of milk.
My God, he had.
He saw your light.
Yeah.
And he's out there, and it raw out, wasn't it?
Yeah, oh, geez, it was snowing and blowing out there. It wasn't so cold that night.
Yeah.
But it was just miserable, you know, that snowing and blowing.
All that blowing can get you. You know, a little of it's all right, but it just keeps on.
Miss Eastman, your father-in-law was active.
Yeah.
He, all the time, wasn't he? He did a lot of things.
Did he work in milk?
Huh?
Did he work in the milk?
No. No, he just worked on the farm there. He had that small farm, 50 acres.
Yeah. But gee, that's all they needed, wasn't it?
Huh?
50 acres, all they needed.
Yeah. Yeah, they keep about a dozen cows.
And yeah.
A few young head of young stock.
Yeah. He didn't grow the corn.
Yeah.
Did he?
Sure, corn for silo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How much corn would he have to put up?
Well, we generally raise about 5 acres. Sometimes we'd have six.
Yeah. And then you didn't have to buy all that stuff.
Yeah. Then it raised oats. We'd have 5 or 6 acres of oats, maybe 10 acres of oats.
Yeah. Well.
Then they used to hire the young stock pastured in the summer. But we always had feed enough to feed them all in the winter.
You'd hire them pastured, the young ones?
Yeah.
Oh. You mean, and get them on a good pasture?
Yeah, higher amounts, you know, that is. We either rent a pasture right out, or else so much ahead, see, for renting them in there.
But you'd put them where they'd have a good pasture.
Yeah.
And they'd grow.
Well, sometimes we'd take them and have to drive them about 5 or 6 miles, maybe sometimes 10.
Oh, really? How'd you drive, on a horse?
No, driving right along the road.
On a horse?
No, generally have a horse and buggy behind, and two or three fellas walking.
But they didn't give you any trouble?
Not very much. The next door neighbor there, he generally had half a dozen to go to pasture too. They generally get them pastured together, you know, and then we could take them, drive them right over, and then in the fall we'd drive them back.
Yeah.
We went over one fall after them, oh, it was 6 or 8 miles. And this neighbor, one of his heifers had gone wild. And, you know, we couldn't get nowhere near her.
I know how that is.
And we tried to get her in with a heifer at all. We worked there for a couple hours, and geez, you couldn't get her. Couldn't do a thing with it.
Yeah.
So we started from home, and old Jay says, well, we'll come back over tomorrow, he said, and shoot her and butcher her. So we started from home. Geez, it's every little ways. Up on the side hill somewhere, you'd see her coming. And by Jesus, we got over home to go down to his barn, and she jumped the damn fence and went right down the barn, went right in with him in the barn.
Just wasn't going to come with the rest.
Yes, sir, but you know, they never could keep her anywhere. She'd hop the damn fence just like nothing.
Oh, she kept that up.
But she'd always, after she freshened and come into milk, she'd always come into the barn every night and morning, but you wouldn't know where she was in the daytime.
Oh, really?
Hell, she might be over on me, or she might be there on their place, or over the other way, or someplace else. You never knew where she was going to be.
Yeah.
She'd just come right to a fence and hop over just like a deer.
And what's the thing you can do about it?
Nothing. He took and put a ring in her nose and a strap around her front foot, fetlock there, you know, and tied her nose down there within a foot of that front foot. And you know that old bastard would jump a fence just the same.
No.
Jesus, you know. Well, she'd just throw her goddamn head up, and that foot would come right up, you know, and she'd just rear right up, and over the fence she'd go. So after a while, I took it off, because he's afraid she'd break her neck. she'd go just like that.
Well, when she'd come in at night in the barn to eat and milk, you had her there in a stanchion.
Yeah.
So you could hold her.
But she'd go right in the stanchion right there, and everything was all right in the barn.
Yes.
She didn't bother one bit in the barn. But in the wintertime, you turn them out to drink, and hell, you wouldn't know whether she was coming in the barn right off or not. You know, she might just hop the fence and take it off across the lot somewhere, and when she got ready, she'd come back.
Well, I'm a darn. And she's a good cow.
Yeah. I tell you another funny thing that I had happen one time. Where I lived, the house sat just above the road, but up back of the house, there was a good deal like Dan Mitchell's. It was kind of on the side hill there, see, but
yeah.
We raised a darn nice alfalfa on that up there. Oh, God, he'd get an awful crop of it. Well, I was up there and mowing around the chunk there, and the cow pasture fence was up on two sides of it here. And I mowed up the hill here and come across like that and come down around here and come around like this. And I'd been around 4 or 5 times.
Yeah.
Jesus, all at once I mowed right onto this calf. The young calf there, see?
Yeah.
Well, it wasn't ours. It belonged to Jay over there, and one of his heifers had freshened up down the lot, see? So I thought, Jesus, I was over and just a newborn calf. And I said, I'll just move him out of the way and go on about my mowing. You know, I went over to put my arms under him to pick him up. Jesus, that calf jumped up on his feet and the devil couldn't have caught it.
Yeah.
Jesus, he just took right off. He said he was scared pretty near to death, you know. He never seen any man, you know.
Yeah.
And then having me pick him up like that. My God, that thing took off. And you know, we had one hell of a time getting that calf too.
Yeah.
The only way we got it, we took the calf's mother and put a holler on to her and led her out around, you know, to where the calf was. And then we led her up to the barn. Got up to the barn and Jesus, the calf didn't want to go in. We had a devil of time getting the calf into the barn up
yeah,
there.
Yeah.
But they finally got half a dozen fellows there, and one of them led the heifer into the barn there, you know, and the rest of them closed in on it there, and we got the calf in the barn.
Yeah.
Of course, after he'd been in the barn for 2 or 3 days, why, he got used to us there.
Yeah.
But boy, I'm telling you that calf really went down across that lot. And Beller, God, you could hurt him for half a mile.
Oh, Beller.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I know they can be wild. Gee whiz.
I told Jay, I said, Jesus, he must be older than what I figured he was. But you know them cows, they'll have a calf out in the lot and they'll take and hide them.
Yeah. Some of the gentle cows.
Yeah.
Bess Eastman, when I first got this herd of cattle, the water filled up that whole swamp down there, and it went clear on up in the woods. And one of the best cows I got was a little wild. And when she calved that spring, that would have been, I got them here the 1st of April, so it had been sometime along in April. She went as far as she could over there in them woods, and then she come out into the swamp where the water was, to a little island of a thing. It wasn't deep, you know, and that's where she had that calf. Oh, she was a nice cow. I sold that cow. I have done some of the most stupid things. I sold that cow, Mr. Eastman, because she didn't have the right marking on her.
Yeah.
What did I care what marking she had, just so she had pretty calves? Oh, I tell you. But I think the stupid things I've done.
Well, you can make a living up there on 50 acres of land.
Yeah.
It was dairy cows.
He had dairy cows.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now that was your father-in-law.
Yeah. Well, when he died, then I took over up there. Well, we lost all of the purebred cows in the TB test when they first started testing them for TB. They lost all the cows in the TB test, and that just about finished him up.
Yeah, well, that's while he was still living.
Yeah, he just, that just about finished him up, the touching them cows, because he'd spent his whole life, you know,
bringing up that herd.
Getting that line of cows up there, you know, where there was something.
Yeah.
And, of course, he's milking 12 cows and getting 6 full cans of milk. And that is quite a lot of milk.
Yeah. How much it cost?
We had one cow give 86 pounds of milk in one day. Of course, nowadays they've got them that give us a lot more than that, but
yeah.
Jesus, that was a record in them days.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, he liked to make hay.
Yeah.
Because that's when he had his cider.
I wish I had a good glass of cider right this minute.
And
he used to save 2 or 3 barrels of cider for haying up there. And you know, by making it in the fall, you know, God, when they come along haying, it's pretty hard. Well, as long as you was working right straight along, you could drink a glass of that cider every load of hay. But if you sat down for a load, but even now you was calculating, don't you think you wasn't? Well, this neighbor, the Jay Clark, lived up there. His wife was very religious. And she didn't know that Jay used to like to come down and get a glass or two of cider, you know.
Yeah.
But we was haying down there and getting some hay right close to the barn. And we had one more load left out there. And Jay says to my father-in-law, he says, "Freddie," he says, "I'll let you and Arthur and Dade go and get that load of hay." He says, "I'm going to rest. I'm getting tired." Well, right just above the barn was an apple tree, a nice little shade tree, you know.
Yeah.
And Jesus, well, Jay, he sat down up there with his back against that apple tree, and we went up and got that load of hay, and he got back down there, and Jesus, Jay was laying down. And I went over there to see if he was going to help us unload. Jesus, he was a snoring to beat all, drunker than a darn fool, you know. He didn't know nothing. Hell, you couldn't wake him up. Oh, we got the load of hay off. Dade, he runs up, tells his mother, you know. I wish you had seen her coming down the road. She was taking steps 6 foot long.
Oh!
And what she didn't call my father-in-law wasn't worth talking about.
Got her son drunk.
Her husband drunk.
Her husband drunk.
Yeah.
She went to church.
Yeah, she was a great church woman.
Yes.
Yeah.
And she didn't want any of that foolishness. Well, look, Mr. Eastman. If you get too many of those church people, that'll just cut out all the cider. You won't have nothing at all to have any fun with, will you?
The second door neighbor up above there was an Irishman. And boy, he was an awful strict Catholic.
Oh, was he?
Oh, Jesus. And he married an English girl that was just about the other way from being Catholic, you know. And her brother was one of the head ones of the Ku Klux Klan.
Oh, really?
Up there.
Oh, really?
And this Irishman had 4 or 5 hogs, and they were just about ready to kill him, you know. So, Jesus, this brother-in-law and another fellow come over there one night with a pail of red paint, and they put KKK right on each one of them hogs on each side of it.
Yeah.
And by Jesus, do you know that old Irishman there? He sold them hogs. My God, he wouldn't eat any meat with the KKK on it. Hey, Jesus, he sold them hogs to the meat market and turned around and went and bought another hog for his own use.
He didn't want any Ku Klux Klan in that meat, huh?
he kind of laid it to his brother-in-law, but he didn't know for sure.
Yeah.
There was a lot of them around there. They didn't know that he was one of the head ones of the Ku Klux.
Oh.
The people didn't know it around there. But he comes to me one day and he says, "How would you like to go to a Ku Klux meeting tonight?" Well, I said, "Jesus, Oliver," I said, "the tires on my car ain't too damn good. I don't want to drive too far." I said, "Where is it?" Well, he said, "You come down to my house." He lived down in the village, but he had this big farm up there. I said, "Well, I don't believe it was quite a mile from where I lived, where this big farm was. He said, you come down to my place, he says, and go with me. So I drove down to the village 2.5 miles. I got in with him, and we started down to the next town, about 1.5 miles down there. And he says to me, you see that lantern on the corner? I said, yeah. Well, he said, we turn here and go up the hill. So, gee, and we got up the hill there, about 1 mile, and he says, you see that lantern sitting on the corner? I said, yeah. Well, he said, we got to turn there. Gee, I come right back over to his darn farm, see? And he had about a 12 or 15 acre lot, and they just took the hay off of it. Well, you know, they had a couple of big trucks that they drove out there in the lot for a platform for the speakers and one thing and another. And gee, the people kept a coming.
Oh, really?
And they had this great big cross, and they had it wound with burlap bags and with a hay wire around it, you know. And it laid on the ground. The goddamn thing was that big around on the bottom there, you know, and probably...
You had a telephone pole.
Yeah, and high, and had a big cross on it. Jesus, all at once they got ready to set that up, and by God, there was a bunch of fellas. They put a truck right up there and drawed it right up into this hole and set it right up there, and the next thing you knew, they had that all saturated with old oil, and they touched a match to it, and they had one hell of a... big cross are going up there. And you know, that damn field was covered with people.
Oh, really?
Yes, sir. They said there were between 5,000 and 6,000 people there that night.
Oh,
yeah.
Well, the word got around.
And they took in over 200 new members that night. Oh, they was bound I was going to join, but Jesus, I didn't want to get into anything like that.
You didn't go along with them?
Huh?
No. You didn't go in with them?
No. So when they got ready to swear them in, he said, I got out of sight. I got out of the way.
Well, there wasn't any niggers up there.
No, but there was a lot of Catholics, and you know the Ku Klux was against the Catholics.
Oh, yes.
And the Catholics were scared of their life of them.
Oh,
was it? Oh, Jesus. Well, I know over in Knoxboro, that is over there about 4 miles from us, they burned a cross over there right on the dooryard of a big Catholic fella. And Jesus, they scared him pretty near to death.
Yeah. Well, it scared that fella. He wouldn't eat them
whole. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I guess I didn't know that they were out for the Catholics, too.
Oh, gee, yes. Yeah.
Oh, yes. I don't know what else there was. The Catholics and the niggers and all this other thing.
I don't know. I guess that was about the biggest of it, the Catholics and the niggers. But, gee, they scared that poor Catholic woman over in Knoxboro there, boy. She and the kids. They said the kids were crying, Mama, will they burn our house down?
Well, now, where did your father-in-law stand on that?
Huh?
Was your father-in-law in on that?
No, he died before that.
That before that? Well, that was in the 30s.
Yeah, he died that before the Ku Klux was up in there.
You know, that's too bad. He didn't live to the 30s. It looks like the 30s, most things happened in the 30s.
Yeah.
Even with everything so tight, it's still the 30s.
Oh, geez, at one time up there, that was the fore part of the 30s up in there. Geez, they was awful strong up in there.
And they'd get up and make speeches. Would you know who they were?
Well, one of the big speakers up there that night was a county judge.
Oh.
Yeah, and you wouldn't hardly believe that either.
No. But he had on his uniform. But
yes, it, all of them, the head guys there, they was all robed, you know, and had hood on over them.
But he didn't have a hood on.
Yeah, he was robed and everything. I didn't know who he was that night, but I found out afterwards.
Oh, is that the way it was?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I found out afterwards who he was.
Yeah. So there's no connection between the Kuklux and the Milk War?
No.
None at all. And the same fellas weren't doing it.
No. No, an entire different outfit.
Yeah.
Well, I guess I'd better be getting for home.
Mr. Eastman, I am glad that Ms. Eastman is feeling better and her appetite is better.
She was feeling better tonight.
Maybe that medicine, she have to get used to that medicine. Now, I will tell you, if that medicine don't agree with her, you can tell, she can tell.
Yeah.
You just throw it away, take it back over there and tell them
well,
you don't agree with them.
They wanted her to take Maalox about an hour after she had her meal. Jesus, it'd make her sicker than blazes. So by God, don't take any more of it.
That's right. Well, now there's other stuff now,
yeah.
You see. If it don't work right, just tell them.
You don't want to take anything that makes you sick.
Oh, no.
No.
Well, we'll think of something else we can fix that maybe make her taste good to her.
Yeah, she come right out in the kitchen here and telling me just what to do with it. Hey, I said, by God, you're better all right.
Well, I was going to send her a little pot of rice, and I thought, well,
no, she's
you know, I'd send the potatoes first, and so rice.
Say. Mr. Eastman, you missing something. Oh, are you? Well, wasn't they coming on that thing? When are they going to have that saying thing?
I thought that jury thing on impeachment was at 8 o'clock.
I don't know.
Well,
I guess not.
That's the true thing. That's not it. That's 10-5.
The cover-up involves the offense of obstruction of justice, for instance, payments of hush money, inducing witnesses to commit perjury and others. These offenses have been committed at the White House or by the president's most intimate aides and friends. But if the president is not personally and criminally liable because the evidence does not directly and personally implicate him, nevertheless, we may appropriately ask, has the president fulfilled his obligation to see to a faithful execution of the laws, a solemn obligation imposed by the Constitution?
They're going to shove him.
They're not going to take long about it, are they?
The Supreme Court voted today 8-0 for him to turn over those tapes.
Oh, they did?
They voted 8-0 for him to turn over them tapes.
Yeah. That'll get him, them tapes.
Yeah, that'll get him, sure.
Yes. They've already got him. They don't need any more. What do they need any more for, Mr. Eastman? They got that many volumes.
Yeah.
You know, they publishing books. Books.
Jesus,
didn't you see that?
I read somewhere how many thousand pages My Jesus, way up pretty near a million pages of what do you call it, testimonies? It ain't really testimonies, but it goes through a court.
Yeah.
But it's on that line.
Yeah. Eastman, you, when do you, are you on the credit system like John Palmer now? You keep...
Keep what?
you people owe you, and you keep your little papers.
Oh yeah.
you don't want to you don't want to get it like John Palmer. You know, I asked Mr. Palmer one time. I said, Mr. Palmer, looks to me like anybody go broke. Keep ever books like you do. Well, he says if I didn't sell on credit, he said I wouldn't go broke. Nobody'd buy anything. And I think he means that.
Yeah.
I think that's the way he operates.
Yeah.
Anybody can owe him and owe him and owe him and go in there and still buy stuff.
Yeah, but he tells them about it once in a while.
Oh, yes, but he doesn't get after them. Well, I tell you, what, this rainy weather I don't care for because it ain't raining much. I've seen a whole lot of that in Florida where you got rainy weather and no rain.
Yeah.
We get very little rain.
Well, it's supposed to rain tomorrow.
Well,
are you working outside?
Well, partly in and out. God, I had a comical one this afternoon. A woman called up that her automatic washing machine was leaking. And she couldn't find out where, and one thing and another, so I went up and I took the top off of it and turned it on. The water started coming in. The little goddamn hose comes up the top out of that automatic control, you know, that lets the water in and out. And this hose just about as big as my finger, and the damn thing had a crack in it. And the water was just like that. And it hit against the side of the the side of the machine, you know, and just run right down, see, on the inside. But Jesus, when